to episode 38 of Did You Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. This season, I'm sharing new episodes every Monday discussing all things vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Do you know that I offer one-on-one coaching, specifically around veganism? If you found inspiration in these episodes but want more accountability or need help guiding you through exploring a vegan lifestyle, check out my website for more information. Today, I am joined by author M.C. Ronan, recently named as one of the most globally acclaimed and loved vegan authors in the movement by the New Zealand Vegan Magazine. Maya Cohen Ronan, writing under the pen name M.C. Ronan, is a multi-award-winning author based in New Zealand. She's been vegan since 2012 and an animal rights activist nearly as long. An avid fiction reader with a penchant for dystopian thrillers, she soon discovered that since becoming vegan, Maya could no longer enjoy reading. Each book represented a challenge of speciesism and animal cruelty. She realized that vegan-friendly fiction books were difficult to find, and moreover, fiction books that deliberately promoted animal rights and veganism were all too rare. It was this realization that led her to write the Liberation Trilogy, a series of fast-paced, page-turning, exciting dystopian thrillers with a strong ethical message suitable for vegans and pre-vegans. In the rationale for the most recent award won by the Liberation Trilogy, the Vegan Choice Award, it was said that the books are as relevant to our generation as George Orwell's 1984 was to his. It should be required reading for everyone. So when I tell you that Maya's books are excellent, I mean excellent. When this interview ended, Maya and I agreed that it felt like a couple of friends just having a conversation. I hope you feel that way as a listener as well. You'll hear Maya talk about World Book Day, which is March 2nd. There's a link in the show notes so you can sign up and join the roundtable of five female vegan fiction authors. It's going to be amazing. I'll be there. I hope to see you there. Let's get into it. Say hi to M.C. Ronan. Hey, Maya. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you for having me. That's fantastic. Excited.
Yeah. I'm really excited to have you. I'm excited to talk about your books, talk about World Book Day and veganism and all the good stuff. But I always like to start with your vegan journey. So tell us how you got here.
Sure. So I turned vegan in 2012. My daughter was 2 months old. She is my second child. Well, third, if you count the one I lost. And I'll get to that because I think there are a few stages in my path to veganism. And it's not a one event, like a cataclysmic event, boom, something happened. Okay, I'm it did happen like that, but I think there are other events that kind of paved the way for it to happen. So in 2012, my daughter was 2 months old and I found out the truth about dairy. And boom, I decided to go vegan. But it's not as simple as it sounds, right? I mentioned two or three children, depending how you count them. My first son, my firstborn son, my love, was born in 2004. And he developed this fascination with sharks. Actually, I'm in his room because when I talk from the living room, the dogs might start barking. But behind me, I think, I'm not sure where to go. Oh, you can see this poster. Yeah. It's on the wall since he was 3 years old. Oh. He developed fascination with sharks. And so through his fascination, a good parent, I want to help him learn more. And I don't know anything about sharks. So I start looking into it. And then I discovered Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Captain Paul Watson. And I was so enthralled by what they were doing, because you know, I loved sharks now, and obviously dolphins, whales, and sea life. And I really want to help conserve them and protect them. And that's my fascination and involvement with supporting Sea Shepherds started with my son around when he was three. Now I'm going to park that and I'm coming back to it. Don't worry, I'm going to come back to this Sea Shepherd story. But two really, really important things happened in the next few years. And in 2007, as I said before, I mentioned I lost one baby. So I was pregnant and I was heavily pregnant. So I was kind of very, very advanced in my pregnancy. And then some health catastrophe happened and I was going to lose my life and I lost the baby. And obviously is a pregnancy that I really wanted. I was planning for it. And the loss for me was something, it took me a long time to actually admit to it and start talking about it. Even when I describe my road to veganism, I always kind of not even mentioned it until I realized, why don't I talk about it? It's important. It's important for other women or families who go through the same thing, but it's important, really important for me on my way to veganism, because sensing the tremendous loss of my baby, I was very depressed. I really had to claw out of the pit of despair that I found, and I had a boy. So I was so conflicted because I had my beautiful boy and I love him, but then I was also so mournful of the loss of the baby and trying to be a good mother, but then looking after myself. And it was really hard. It was a really hard time. And it took me a long time to really regain my joy and loving of life and everything, and being loving my motherhood. But then the good thing about what happened is that in 2012 I had my daughter, and she's a real miracle. So now I had my son and my daughter, and the thing is that I experienced both the despair, the you know, the depression, the hardness, the sorrow of losing your baby. And then the joy that, you know, having her was like a gift from the universe, you know. And it was so amazing. And I was I couldn't be happier. And my wishes came true. And then when she was 2 months old, back to Sea Shepherd now. the Sea Shepherd were going to or back from, I'm not sure which end it was, from saving whales in the South Pacific. In the Southern Ocean, near Antarctica, the Ross Sea. And they came to dock in Wellington, New Zealand, where I am. And we went to see the ship, and it was very exciting. Captain Paul Watson was there. I took some photos of him, not with him, but of him. And we took a tour of the ship. And then through the tour, or actually before, when I read about it, I realized that when you go on a Sea Shepherd ship to save whales and that, you have to adhere to a vegan diet because the lifestyle is vegan. And when I read that, or heard that, when I found out about it, I was really surprised, because for me, veganism was quite an extreme way of life. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, what's wrong with dairy, right? It's natural. Cows give us milk, you know. What's wrong with that? So because it was Sea Shepherd and I was really supportive of them, I had to find out about it. So because it has to be important. If they insist on it, then there must be something there. And I looked into it, and then lo and behold, you know, to my utter surprise, I found out the truth about dairy, and I was devastated, because what cows go through by this cruel industry is such an exploitation of the maternal organs. They are forcefully, well, first the bulls get forced into ejaculation, and it's, if you haven't seen the videos of this process, it's R-rated abuse. And then it's injected into the cow. I don't know. I don't want to get into graphic descriptions, but it's very cruel. It's such an abuse of mm-hmm. of the reproductive organs. And then the cow gets pregnant and she carries her baby for 9 months, just like women do.
Yeah.
Humans. And when the babies are born, the calves, they're taken away in New Zealand immediately. At 4 days old, they're already sent to slaughter because New Zealand is still such a dairy country and we have so many calves. There's nothing to, there's so much pet food that you can make of 2 million calves. You know, there's right. there's just the limit of how much use you can, how much calf hides you can spread ugly on the floor, make it even more ugly. And, you know, there's just a limit of what you can do with these things. And so that despair that cows go through when the baby is taken. And here I am after loss. I know how a loss feels. Yeah. I know how it feels to have a baby that you really wanted and carried. Mm-hmm. But then someone comes and take them away. I couldn't deal with this. What we're doing is this such cruelty, and me having been through, you know, the pain and right. the joy. And because cows, even though they know what's waiting for them, only really like spent cows who have been through the process over and over and over again might not display joy mm-hmm. with a new calf that is born, but mostly they will still go to it after the birth, and they will lick the baby and really try to nurse the baby before someone comes and just, and they shove it away and they take mm-hmm. it away. And it's, the cruelty is so immense. I just went, you know, vegan then yeah. immediately after I realized there's no babies to that. I can't participate in this anymore. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my family turned vegan after me. My husband was already vegetarian, so for him the, you know, the road from A to B was a bit shorter, mm-hmm. but he still, you know, still consumed dairy. So he still had himself to understand what was wrong with. Like he said, I told him we have to go vegan. And he said, well, what's wrong with you? So he found out and then he understood what was wrong with me. Right. And then, yeah, we all turned vegan, my kids, everyone. Yeah.
So. Oh, that's wonderful. What an incredible story of joy and pain and loss and new love. And it's so wonderful. And look at it, what it brought you to, not just your beautiful children, but also this new way of living, of being vegan, which I always say is the most beautiful way to live.
It's the most compassionate. I feel most at one with nature as well. I feel like vegans truly understand the nature of the cosmos, you know. I think other than dealing with the cruelty of the world around us, when we just look inwards, I think it's the most peaceful way yeah. to live, really.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. I feel so much more connected to animals, to plants, just the universe as a whole since going vegan. And even in the moments where I hear about cruelty or I witness cruelty and I put myself in that situation and think about it from the victim's perspective and how painful that is, just being able to make that connection brings a different kind of beauty that I think we can't experience if we're not able to make a connection like that. And veganism really does open us up to it.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes.
Yeah. So wonderful. So lovely. So you are also an activist.
Yes.
Tell us about your activism.
So, you know, here I was all vegan and stuff. And, in the first year I wasn't an activist because I was still having to settle in my veganism. I had to learn, you know, nutrition and be more confident about my veganism. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, when I just turned vegan, at the very, I would say, in the first year or two, I would still go to non-vegan events with events where people would eat animal flesh. I don't do that now. I just avoid. And if I'm invited, I would come after all food is gone and cleared from the table. I just feel personally abused when people consume animal flesh in front of me, or even dairy milk and products. But also, I find myself looking at the people who do that, and I think, and I lament, you know, I lament their the fact that they just refuse to make the connection. But I still have non-vegan friends, obviously. I call them pre-vegans, because I do believe in the power of change. And I think everyone has the capacity to change. We have people who used to be dairy farmers in the community. We have people who used to be slaughterhouse workers in the community, ex-hunters, fishermen, women. So everyone can change. Yeah, so after about a year, I felt that it wasn't enough for me just to not consume it myself. I really had to let people know. I had the feeling that people don't go vegan because they don't know, because they haven't seen what I've seen, mm-hmm. and they haven't heard what I've heard. And I had such a compelling need to speak up for the animals. Now, we say animals are voiceless. They're not voiceless. I think they have a quiet and an unbelievable way to communicate their suffering with us. Mm-hmm. If you have a dog, you would know when the dog is suffering mm-hmm. for the same way you would know when a pig is suffering, when a cow is suffering. And it's so easy to see. It's in their eyes. It's in the way that they move. It's in the way... You know, I have a dog that I adopted. She was 4 years old, and she had been abused before. We had a whole lot of work put into her to get over her behavior and get her into socialize with other dogs and people. She's amazing now. She's like completely transformed. But still, if and she's been abused by a man. So if someone comes in the house and he's a big bulky man, you know, it would immediately cower, you know, immediately be unsure. I don't know. I'm afraid of you, or growl. She's communicating this with us. We can read the signs. So it's not that animals are voiceless. It's just we are ignorant mm-hmm. and refusing to listen. And I wanted to speak for them so that people will start listening. And the only way I could do it was through activism, and I'm still an activist. I am one of the organizers for the Wellington Animal Save. We do vigils outside of the local slaughterhouse, and I do other actions as well. I'm involved in a lot of other things as a supporter and participator. I think activism is a wonderful way to really get the message out, and there's so many ways to be active. Really, there's so many ways. There's outreach, and there's vigils, and all and protests, and marches, and art, which we'll get to through books mm-hmm. and stuff. But there's so many ways, and I think the other bonus by going and becoming an activist is that you get to know people who are on the exact same wavelength as you are. You find your family in a way, mm-hmm. you know, with other people. I joined activism before I even knew a single person in my local activist group. Didn't know anyone. I just went one day. I felt so much, such a strong need, compelling need. And I went, and these people are still my best friends today. You know, they make my immediate circle of friends. I trust them with my life. And you feel less alone mm-hmm. when you mingle with other vegans, with other activists, because it can feel very lonely in our work or school or studies or, you know, families, when people around us who surrounding us are not vegan. It can feel very lonely on holidays especially and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's really good to surround yourself with people like you who understand you and understand your mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I first went vegetarian and then went vegan later. And even just being vegetarian, I was the only vegetarian I knew. And I was shouting it from the rooftops. I wanted everyone to know. When I went vegan later, so I went vegan kind of on and off for a little bit, and then I went vegan like forever. And by that point, I already knew some vegans, which was really nice. But I remember being out in the world, and I would see someone wearing like a vegetarian shirt or something about, you know, vegetarianism or veganism, and I'd want to talk to them. There was such a pull because I did feel so lonely, because I'd try to tell people about what I had learned, what I had seen, the videos, the sadness, the cruelty, what humans are really capable of. And it felt like no one was listening. And if I had just had, I mean, thankfully my constitution is such that once I've decided something is important to me, like I'm not going to let the rest of the world tell me that it doesn't matter and I'm not going to give it up. But I feel like if I had been less strong that way, I wonder if I would have allowed it to make me feel differently because I'd felt so alone. So it is, yeah, like find other vegans, find people to connect with. And there are different forms of activism. Not everyone is ready to be at a vigil. Not everyone is ready to do protests, but they could be ready to have a conversation. So start a podcast.
Yeah. Or absolutely 100%.
Yeah. Or in your case, how else has your activism shown up in the world?
My writing, yes. Yeah. And I do feel that there are a lot of amazing artivists out there doing amazing artwork. There are other authors like me. They are obviously musicians, like with they're very famous, like Moby and others. And you know, there are filmmakers. So many expressions mm-hmm. of activism that is amazing. It's and you whatever you feel that it's your passion, your talent, your skill, you can use it for extending the message. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to your books, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So I've read the first two. I just finished Liberation yesterday. So I haven't started It Was in Our Hands just yet, but I love them.
Thank you.
I've had such I had a good time reading them, but like there's hard stuff in here too. So let's be real about the reality that's in these books. But it's a really interesting and beautiful way that you pull us in and you start to show people what's happening in the world. And put it into a context, kind of like the way it related to you with losing your baby and then having the joy of a new baby. You're allowing the reader to really be in the story and feel what's happening and understand what animal agriculture industry is without like looking at the graphic videos. Like they put themselves into this. I was immediately in the story. I was Sunny from the minute I started reading it. And it's just the way you're writing is you just pull us in. Where did the story come from? Like, how did you, just tell us more about that.
Yeah. Okay. The need to write, I always written manuscripts, but I never thought about publish. I didn't think they were too good, or I thought, nah, they're not good enough, or they're not interesting enough. And I written and put them in the drawer and forgot about it. But then after turning vegan, I found that I can read less. My reading ability obviously wasn't affected. It's just the stories were a little bit confronting mm-hmm. because every book that you would pick, well, obviously, a book is written by, an author, and authors have their own set of values or, embedded values or way of life. So, you know, if an author is used to having bacon and eggs in the morning, this will find itself into the book because there's nothing wrong with it for them. So every book I picked up had a lot of speciesism in it. And I'll explain what speciesism is just for, you know, viewers and listeners who don't know what it is. Yeah. Speciesism, in my own words, okay, it's like sexism. It's like racism. Mm-hmm. It's our perceived species as humans supremacy, right, as perceived human supremacy over other species. And this perceived human supremacy kind of gives us the right, quote unquote, to value grade other species. So in that regard, we can pet and love a dog, but have no second thought for eating a pig. And every time I would pick my taste personally is for fast-paced books, you know, page turner. You know, I like to be the thrill of reading and always wondering what's next, which is also how I write, because that's what I like reading. So that's how I like writing. But every time I picked a book, you know, within a few chapters or a few even paragraphs,
yeah,
you know, eating a chicken sandwich or frying bacon or something. So it was really hard. Plus, there are a few books who are very, very well known where there's real animal cruelty in them. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't even think about it if you weren't vegan. But there's, you know, very famous trilogy where the protagonist hunts. I'm not going to go into it. Yeah, everyone knows what I mean. But, you know, the hunting of animals in the forest. If you don't live a vegan life, it's really hard to understand what's wrong with that. But when you read it and you're like, oh, when you started, like you say, I was with Sunny from the get-go. When you start reading a book, you really want to empathize and with the protagonist, with the leading character. You want to like them because you were with them, you're walking with them, you see their world through their eyes, and you really want to be one with them. But then, boom, they go and hunt and look, you know, actually, I don't like you.
Yeah.
So I don't care what happens to you.
Yep.
So it's, and I found it really, it was a conflicting thing because I wanted to read and I couldn't. So I thought, okay, let's find vegan fiction books. Where are you?
Yep.
Nothing. So around 2016, this is not the case anymore, by the way, we'll get to the book day. But in 2016, I just thought, okay, it doesn't exist. So I need to write something. I need to write a vegan book. I need to write a book for vegans so that they can pick it up and they'll say, oh, great. Mm-hmm. Nothing of that cruelty there, and no, you know, mockery of vegans, because that also starting to kind of pick up the mockery, yes, of vegans in books. The vegan character is the one you're supposed not to like. That's kind of starting to go noticed by me now. And then I thought, okay, I'll write it. But just writing a book for vegans wasn't enough. I needed to write a book that pre-vegans could read and pick it up and really like it, because, you know, it's a thriller. I wrote a thriller because this is what I like reading. Not a gory thriller, by the way. It's not horror. Mm-hmm. So they'll pick it up and they'll start reading, and maybe they won't understand immediately what's what, but they, because it's such a page turner, they won't be able to stop, and when they will have to get to the end of the book, and then the penny will drop, because the message is strongly embedded in the book. And I wanted to, you know, to provide a book, a story where I was standing outside of slaughterhouses and I would put images of animals and I would say, look in their eyes, please look in their eyes. You will feel the connection immediately. And people refuse. They refuse to look at the content that you put on social media if they feel like, well, no, this might trigger me to change. Oh, God forbid.
Right.
So they wouldn't look in the eyes. And so I had to make them the eyes are theirs. Mm-hmm. So we are looking at the world through the victim's eyes. Right. And so they will have to go through processes that would make them understand, you know, make them sympathize finally with what animals go through. So that was the thought, and that was the shed. I've got mm-hmm. the book here. I write it under my pen name. Yeah. Oh yeah. Hello. Hello, the shed. That was the first book. And I honestly didn't plan on writing a trilogy. I just thought I'll just write this one and we'll see. You know, I didn't even think I had it in me to keep writing. I thought, oh wow, I just did it, you know. Woo-hoo.
Yeah.
But the beautiful, beautiful thing that happened with this book is that I started. It didn't happen overnight. Okay, it took a while, but it's like you throw a little stone and it did a little pebble in the lake. You know, you start look the circles that it started expanding and expanding, and the following of the book and the readers, and people started to give it to each, to, you know, someone would get the book and they give it to someone else in their family and or friends, and suddenly I would get messages from from pre-vegans, you know, pre-vegans would message me, say thank you for this book, you helped me make the connection. I got messages from ex-dairy farmers thanking me for the book, for writing the book. I got, you know, I still get messages from people say, okay, you convinced me through your book to stop dairy, to stop. This is the purpose why I write. I mean, that's the only reason. And so I still am, you know, in awe of the effect of what's happened. And this is just with a book that I published myself, because I couldn't find, I self-published because I couldn't find an established publishing house who would take me on. Mm-hmm. I had a few literary agents who were excited, really excited about the shed, but they told me very frankly, I don't know how to represent you because you're such a niche market. And I was so, you know, bewildered by that response, because what's niche about a thriller? Okay, there is clearly a vegan message in this book, but so what? It's not like, oh, it's like you bring a tofu dish to a party and everyone thinks this is the dish for the vegans to
eat. Right,
you know?
We can't touch that.
Yeah, it's not for the other people. It's a book for everyone. I write for everyone. And clearly pre-vegans were not put off by the fact that I do have at the back of the book in my little blurb that I am vegan and I'm an activist. Like, it didn't put off a lot of people. The people who were put off by it probably shouldn't have read the book.
Yeah.
But so I started being asked to continue the story. I wasn't prepared for that. And I realized that, people really want to know how the story continues. So I wrote Liberation. And that's book number 2, and it was published in February 2020, just when coronavirus
just in time.
So yeah, the typical middle book, the suffering middle book. But anyway, I thought at the time okay, I'm going to write just these two books. Liberation, it kind of ends on a cliffhanger, but you know, it kind of isn't, because I felt like I left Sunny in a good place where, you know, it's good to leave her there. But people weren't satisfied. People started asking me for the end of the story, because I realized that I didn't provide them with, with a proper ending. People like to know how the story ends. It needs to have an obvious ending, and it needs catharsis. Right. And I didn't provide that catharsis. So I set out and I wrote the final book in the trilogy, It Was in Our Hands, and that came out in July 2021. And that completes the trilogy. And here we are. Now I am busy writing a new book that is a standalone, and it's not part of the trilogy or a trilogy. And it's very, very focused on climate change and our need to act and our need to be vegan and to endorse the plant-based treaty.
Yeah. I'm very excited for that.
Thank you. So, me too.
Yeah. So where are you in the process? Like, is it almost done? Are you kind of in the middle? When can we kind of expect the book, maybe?
I hope later this year. This year, yes.
Okay.
But you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. That is awesome. So climate change. Okay. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. It's not funny, but when we first got on the call, I asked if you were okay, if things were okay around you, because I knew you're in New Zealand and I had heard that there was a lot of flooding going on in Auckland and people really were suffering from it. I had read at that point, it was earlier today, 4 people had died. More than 70 people had been displaced from their homes, and that was not the end of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, climate change is real. And I don't know what it's like in New Zealand, but here in the US, there are people who will actually argue with me that it is not real. And they've made it a political thing, not a people thing, not an earth thing. And they are unwilling to hear.
Yeah, because if you agree that there's a problem, then that means you need to be to take action to make a difference and change. And people are lazy and they would rather not change anything. Or, you know, maybe change the light bulb, which is ridiculous. That's not going to save us. But a real deep change, and that they're not ready to, you know, they're not ready to make that change. They don't want to. It's funny because the state of emergency that just happened in Auckland, it was scenes that were never seen in the history of New Zealand in Auckland, where the flooding was just devastating. And the mayor is a climate change denier, which I thought was a big comic joke. But yeah, so when people asked him what he's going to do, he said, "Oh, I'm just going to wait for the rain to stop."
Yeah.
That's a very good mayor.
I hope
that's his first and last term. But anyway, that's not for me to decide. I don't vote for the mayor of Auckland because I don't live in Auckland. But I have a friend and my editor. She's already received some of the chapters that I've written. And she said, there's a lot of flooding element in my book already. And people will think I was inspired by what happened in Auckland, but I actually written this like 2 or 3 months before. And she said she was stuck in a car on a highway, really fearing for her life. She had to actually evacuate herself because no one was coming to help her. And the flood water was raising. She had to just leave the car and go and walk to safety. And she said, I couldn't stop thinking about your book because I've already written quite a lot about flooding, and it's it resonated so much because, I'm really excited about this new book.
Yeah.
Sad, get people. Sad what's happening, yeah.
Yeah, get people making that connection. There's so many things that we can do to make the environment better, but the most powerful thing we can do, we get to do it 3 or more times a day, right? Every time we make a choice about what we're eating, the clothes we're wearing, the things that we pay for.
Absolutely.
Do they not realize the power? Because it seems like power is all the rage these days and people want to have it and they want to be in charge of stuff and they want to tell other people what to do. But this is like the ultimate way to make a significant change in the world, in our own lives, in the lives of the people around us, but in the world as a whole.
And there was a research, you know, it. That said that it published in the Science magazine, I think, in 2018, and the science said if the world turned vegan, we can stop. We have basically hold but even reverse the effects that already occurring of climate change. But that was 2018. So I would assume it's too late now, but I don't know. But anything, even if we change now, we will still stop, you know, hold it from going even worse.
Right.
And what I fear is that the thing is that it's like what we call the frog in the boiling water, because the boiling take a while to heat up and start, you know, boiling, the frog won't leap out when it's, they think, oh, it's a little bit warm, or, and then when it's too late and they can't escape. Mm-hmm. So we're a little bit like that frog now, because it's not one cataclysmic event that, oh, the flooding, okay, because it's a flooding and then nothing will happen, and then a drought somewhere else, and then a cyclone suddenly somewhere else. It's, you don't look at the big picture, you don't see it, you don't feel it, because if you live in one place, like I don't live in Auckland, I did not experience the flooding, but I might experience an earthquake. It's hard to look up and see the puzzle. It's one puzzle. Every piece fits together. And we really need to address it as a whole. And we're kind of at the stage where the water is starting to boil, and we are the frog in it, and we're not going out. We're kind of stuck in. And I'm very worried. And for me, writing is activism, but it's also a little bit of therapy. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And we need that outlet, right?
Exactly.
We definitely need that outlet. I'd love to if you could share some tips on, if listeners are interested in getting involved in activism, if you could just share some ideas of maybe where they can look or some things they can do. I'd love that.
Well, yeah. So, I'm part of the Animal Save movement, and I really love what we're doing. It's not just vigils outside of slaughterhouses. We do outreach as well, and a lot of things. But really, I think the most important thing is to know that you might, as we said, not feel comfortable going out to the street and talking to people or marching in a protest or something like that. But the idea, just try once or twice, or see other ways of where you can get involved. Even, after a flooding, for example, there's like a food drive. People want to help other people who are stranded and they don't have money, or they don't have power, or they don't have food because there's no way to get out. So even if you join like a food drive and a vegan food drive and things like that, you don't even have to, you just help the community by showing them vegan food. Mm-hmm. But again, if you have a talent or a skill or something that you love doing, art or singing or filmmaking or photography or writing a book, just go on and do it. Yes, it takes it. It's, as I said, it's not going to be an overnight success. Oh, I wrote a book. Okay, bestseller, J.K. Rowling, and no. But if you put the work, if you put the hard work, really, and do it for the right reasons, there's nothing stopping you from really reaching the audience that you seek. And not just vegans, also pre-vegans, because it's so important with what we do that we reach beyond our community. Mm-hmm. Because making people see the problem, understanding, empathizing, and making the change where they're like me, it's like boom, or, steps by small steps. It doesn't matter, as long as you motivate people to change and show them where. There's so many groups, honestly, there's so many groups out there. Just Google or go to Facebook and look, vegan, wherever you are in the world, or city, and just Google it. Go to the Facebook groups. I think every city in the world will have a vegan group on Facebook. So just go and start knowing people and start chatting and make connections, because these connections, like you and me, we met through the Vegan Business Tribe, right? So it's an international body for vegan businesses and people like me who are writers and all sorts of people, amazing. And we come from all over the world. These connections are so important for your sanity, obviously, but also for your for your creativity, for your business, for reaching out to more people, for more audience. So it's really important to really stick with it and really put the work, but really just go and do it, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't sit at home and say, oh, I should do it. Yeah, I should. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, the world needs everyone's voice.
Yes.
Yeah. And so kind of the same kind of question, but maybe more from an author's perspective. So if someone is feeling really inspired to follow your footsteps and create another vegan book, because we need more, we definitely need more. What are some suggestions you have that way?
Surprisingly, there's more than just me. I didn't know that, you know, until quite recently. But there are more and more beautiful vegan books. And we're talking fiction, because mm-hmm. nonfiction is obviously out there already. There are heaps of nonfiction books and recipe books. We're talking fiction books, novels, mm-hmm. I think you call it in America. But and there's more. There's way more now. I just befriended 5 other writers like me. Each of us had written at least 2 books.
Ooh.
At least 2 books. So I think 2 is the minimum between us. The 5 of us, and we're all writing exciting, wonderful books. So we got together, and we actually on World Book Day. I don't know if you save this for later, but I'll just come with it.
Yeah.
World Book Day in the UK is 2nd of March. So on World Book Day, 2nd of March, we're mm-hmm. going to have we called it round table for lack of what it's kind of a chat. We will talk about ourselves, our veganism, our activism, our writing. We'll talk about our books. And what's coming up, but if you join this event, you will find out about so many other books that are available, not just the Liberation Trilogy, which are my books, but there are other books, and you might find other authors that you feel excited about. And we're just 5. I know at least 4 other authors as well that I just, you know, they just started to come out of the woodwork. Yeah. I didn't even know about them. But by making connections, by starting to make these connections, finally, suddenly you make, it's like, you know, those ripples in the lake. You just find more people. And there are books now. So I think we're all self-published, I'm pretty sure. So Amazon is definitely where you find most of the books, but there are other retailers. I know some people are really averse to using Amazon. My books are on Amazon, but they are on other retailers. It's all on my website. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Kimberly, you're probably going to have that website link, but it's all on my website. So if you want to know more about that event, if you just join my mailing list, so I have a newsletter coming out in February where all the details are going to be.
Cool.
So how to join, et cetera, et cetera. So to join my mailing list, and honestly, I don't spam. It's really just information about my books, about veganism and other books and stuff. So yeah, just join, go to my website, and then you will have a pop-up that say, do you want to join? And you'll just need to put your name and email. If it doesn't pop up and you want to join, email me. You'll see plenty of emailing icons on my website. But the website is a hub for everything. You can also find where to buy the books. There are links and more information about the books, you know, because we didn't really elaborate a lot about the plot and everything. So you can also find it on my website. My website is like the one station for all the information.
Yeah, the website will be in the show notes so they can click right into it. And yeah, I mean, I want to talk about the book, but I didn't want to end up, you know, spoiling anything. So.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
It is. It's a thriller, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a thriller that doesn't it's not gory as I see
right.
it. There's some of the chapters are hard, mm-hmm. but nothing really horrible that you can't deal right. with.
Yeah, I think when I started reading The Shed, you know, the first few pages, I'm like, okay, like I wonder what's trying to figure out what's going on. I'm trying to get too into it before you give me too much. And then as soon as I got it, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was thought... already speeding through it, but then it was more like, I gotta know what's next. I gotta know what's next.
Yeah. 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 I have people who just, and I love it because people take it like people take the books and they go to the beach or they go on holiday or something and they send me pictures of where they're reading the book. I'm like, oh, I wish I could be there. But it's so fun. I have a really great relationship with the readers. I love it. So, yeah. So, you know, being on my mailing list is a little bit of personal because I do share more, definitely more than I put on my socials, mm-hmm. More information and more personal stuff. So, yeah, it's my way of saying, you know, you're not just my readers. I feel like you're my friend. So yeah, it's nice.
I love that.
It's warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds good. Those are my favorite types of newsletters to get. The ones where I feel like the person writing them is thinking about me too, you know? Yeah. But the idea that there are more vegan authors, because I remember I was a very well-loved, very long series of books was recommended to me by multiple people. And they kept saying, it's so funny. It's like, it's a female detective, but she's not really a detective. She kind of, that she's created that job herself and she's hilarious and she loves food and it's just really great. And I said, okay, I'll give it a try because like every woman I talked to was like, this is the best series ever.
I think I know which one you're talking about. Yes, yes, yes.
And I couldn't do it. I didn't find it that funny, but really what got me, there was too much food. And there was too much food. I felt like I couldn't relate because she's just chowing down on all kinds of animals and it just wasn't working for me.
Yeah, I totally relate to that.
There's a website called Does the Dog Die? Have you heard of this website?
No.
I know it sounds awful, right? This website is amazing.
Okay.
Because it's crowdsourced emotional spoilers. And so if there's a movie you really want to see, and now they're adding books to it, which is why I'm bringing it up. There's a movie you really want to see and you know that there's a dog in it. You can look up and see, does the dog die? The website will tell you yes or no. And it will tell you the timing. So whether you're in the movie theater, you know to close your eyes. If you're, you know, at home, you can fast forward or you can choose not to watch it. Yeah. But it started off just where the website would tell you about, you know, cats and dogs. Is there a cat and dog in the movie? Do they die? Now there's animal abuse as a whole and there'll be timings for it. You know, whether or not you see a dead animal will be there. Then they've expanded beyond. So it is very much still, does the dog die? But also, are children abused? Is there a lot of gore? Are there other triggering events? And people put the timestamps in there. And so you can really protect yourself, but you can also uncover some things that maybe even if they're not vegan focused, as a vegan, you're less likely to have to suffer through portions of a movie or a book because you'll know if those things are coming. And I think it's a really great resource.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah.
It's funny that, you know, even me before I went vegan, does the dog die? I would hate it if an animal got hurt or died in the movie, but I never stopped to think about the other animals, you know,
right.
The other animals, the animals I eat, that they just didn't appear on my plate. They died too, and probably way more horrifically and excruciating pain and fear and terror, mm-hmm. more than the dog in the movie. But I never paused to think about it.
Yeah.
And it's really important that, you know, if people listening and they're not yet vegan, which is fine, just, you know, maybe you need to think about if my values are against animal abuse, if seeing a dog die on a movie hurts me, then what am I doing? Why the rest of my life is not aligned with these values? I need to align my actions with my values. And this is what vegans ask people to do. Just align your actions with the value of not hurting animals.
Right.
It's really as simple as that. Honestly. It is.
Yeah, it's not as extreme as some people make it out to be. We really are just getting to the core, I think, of who humans really truly are. And, you know, there is that compassion and connection that we have with other beings. And, you know, they aren't here for us. We aren't here to use them. There's to be some coexisting in a really beautiful way. And yeah, thankfully, a lot of my listeners actually aren't vegan. And so they get to hear stories like this and have these questions posed to them. And then they get some time to stop and think about it.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great. And, you know, that's really, really important that people have, they confront with their questions and with their selves and their own conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what led me to be vegan, and that's what led most vegans to be vegan. You know, we weren't born vegan, unfortunately, but we made the change once we decided that the way we're living our lives is not aligned with the values that we, you know, we disagree with animal abuse, we disagree with hurting others. So why are we causing all this hurt to innocent beings who have no control? And we just do this to them. Mm-hmm. On such an incredible scale, like billions of animals every year, billions. Like if you count fish and sea life, you reach more than 150 billion, probably closer to 200 billion animals a year worldwide. So it's such huge numbers that it's just unable to grasp. So just try to grasp it, you know, just stop and try to think about it. And a lot of times people say, yeah, but I'm just one person. You're not just one person. Even if you just one person who stops, you save, I'm not sure how many, like 7 animals per year or something like that. But we are growing. And the fact that we are growing and growing shows that you're not the only person. You are part of the millions of people, community worldwide. And we are growing and growing. So every other person, every new person who makes the decision to change is a world of change, a world of change. And there's so many ways that you can be helped if you want to make the change. There's like Veganuary, there is Challenge 22, just two that I quickly come to my head. Like there's like 3 weeks or 4 weeks plans where you get a menu, you get a shopping list, you get help, you get support, you go to Facebook groups where people help you and give you advice, so you won't feel alone. Someone will hold your hand during this process of, you know, changing to plant-based diet or living vegan, which means everything changes, your clothes and your makeup and everything else. But you know what? I started just with the food, and then, you know, that circle grew and grew quite quickly, but not from the first day. The first day was really about what I eat. Mm-hmm. And I had no clue. I didn't know what do I make, you know? So, you know, you really have to look into it, get recipes in, and slowly the circle of compassion grows and grows. I realized that I had leather boots and I had leather jackets and wool, and I just felt that I couldn't wear it anymore. I felt this doesn't align with my values now. And so I gave them to a secondhand shop, and I purchased non-leather and non-wool, and you can find them also at secondhand shops, or just, you know, go to find them online or in the shops. There's so many cotton and you know, leather, looking like leather that's made of plants. Mm-hmm. You would never know. Even Doc Martens, have vegan boots now. So you wouldn't even be able to tell that they're not real leather and they're not made of animal skin.
Right. Yeah. I when I went vegetarian, I was still eating, you know, eggs and cheese, but I was almost 20. I was living at home. I had a lot of disposable income because even though I wasn't making a ton of money, I didn't have a lot of bills. And again, living at home, I wasn't paying rent. So when I went vegetarian, the story that got me to go vegetarian was about a downed cow. So why I didn't go straight to vegan, I still don't know, but we all have a journey. And I was like, I'm not wearing these shoes anymore. I'm not wearing these sneakers. I'm getting rid of my handbag. And I gave everything to my mom, who's now vegan herself. So she's since passed things on as well. But I was like, here, take all of this. I don't want any of it. And the last thing that was keeping me away from being vegan was that I was still eating cheese and eggs. But I had to learn how to cook. Cause like you, I was like, what the heck am I supposed to eat now? Cause I also didn't like vegetables when I went vegetarian. It was a learning curve, but
yes,
here I am, you know, 20 plus years later, and I'm vegan and I'm fed and I'm happy and I'm aligned. And that changes your life in a way you can't even expect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. So Maya, I have one more question for you before we go. And thank you so much for spending this time with me tonight. Or today in your time zone.
You. Tomorrow probably.
Yeah, it's really fun. The internet is amazing, right? And our time zones, it's Sunday here, it's Monday where you are. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
But that's not my question. My question for you, because it's did you bring the hummus? Tell us about your favorite hummus or your favorite way to eat hummus.
I would eat hummus, you know, just with a spoon.
I laugh because that's my answer too.
I do make my own, but when I am lazy, there is a hummus here, and it's made. It's kind of new. I just found it in the supermarket, and I love it so much. It's a little bit smoky, so I bet they put some smoked paprika in it. But again, so it comes in a 1 kilo tub, and it's kind of orangey. I can't remember what it says. Vegan on like nice. Vegan hummus, because you would be surprised. Some hummus makers do put dairy powder in the hummus. So I mean, why? I don't know, but they say vegan, so obviously none of that. It's so delicious. I would eat hummus with I would like people put sauce on things. I would just put the hummus on top. I really love it. I love to make my own as well, and I do experiment a little bit with the with the spices and all that. And I would add olives as well. I love hummus with olives, and I love tahini as well on its own, or obviously part of the hummus. Put a bit of tahini paste in it, but I do like to make tahini as well, and I think they complement each other a lot, like tahini and hummus, and just lovely. I mean, what else do we need?
Right.
Show me a vegan who doesn't like hummus.
I know, right?
I remember that there's this movie with what's his name? Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Oh, yeah. It's Adam Sandler, right?
Adam Sandler, yes. And there's a whole scene where he takes the hummus and he puts it on the toothbrush. And I'm like, yes, I'm with you, man. With you. Yeah.
Me too.
I don't do that, but I understand the motivation.
Yes. Same. Maya, thank you so much. I am so honored to have you here with me on Did You Bring the Hummus, and grateful that you were able to take this time, share your story, share your books. Super excited about World Book Day. So there'll be links about that as well in the show notes.
Thank you so much. I had such a good time. It was amazing. Thank you. I hope everyone enjoyed listening, but we certainly enjoyed each other's company. So it's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Which of Maya's activist tips will you try out? Will you do something that pushes you out of your comfort zone? Maybe organize a vegan food drive? Maybe you'll take a talent or hobby that you have and give it an animal rights bend? Be sure to leave a comment on Instagram or Facebook letting me know your plans and any other takeaways from this episode. I hope you'll pick up Maya's books and sign up for her World Book Day event. Links to connect with Maya, as well as many of the things mentioned in this episode, can be found in the show notes. You can connect with Maya via her website at mcronanauthor.com or on Facebook at mcronan and Instagram at mcronan_activist_author. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. You're also invited to join my free private Facebook group for fans of the show. You can find the link in the show notes. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you'd like to hear covered on a future episode or a guest you'd love to hear from? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.